Into the Fold is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world. Brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin, the opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and guests and not of the University of Texas at Austin.
Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, the mental health podcast. I'm your host, Ike Evans, and today we're delighted to bring you episode 135, Black Maternal Mental Health. But first, some mental health headlines. The Hogg Foundation is seeking talented young creators ages 16 to 24. For our New Voices Showcase, we are looking for short videos that answer the question, how would the world be different if it cared about your mental health? Creative young people, we hope to hear from you. And there is going to be a limited number of cash awards for the best submissions. If you're interested, you only have until August 3rd, please go to our website, hogg.utexas.edu, and learn how to submit an entry. The month of July is Minority Mental Health Awareness Month, and throughout this month, we will be facing the stigma surrounding mental health by learning alongside communities about the trauma and mental health issues that Black, Indigenous, and people of color populations face. We are about mental health in everyday life. We are about mental health and all the different ways that that looks, all the different ways that that sounds, shows up for people in communities. The month of July in particular will reflect that. Finally, this story from Texas Tribune, with the headline, "With National Data on Drug Overdoses Lacking, University of Texas Project Looks to Help Provide a Solution." Researchers are testing a program that would allow harm reduction groups to crowdsource data statewide. More than 107,000 Americans died of drug overdoses in 2021, but there is no national count of how many people survive drug overdoses. This new database called Texans Connecting Overdose Prevention Efforts aims to improve drug overdose tracking across the nation's second largest state. This is one attempt to solve a problem that has vexed officials nationwide who are trying to lower the record number of drug deaths. So this new database represents a great leap forward. And that does it for Mental Health Headlines. Don't be left out of the loop. Subscribe to Mental Health Headlines on the Hogg Foundation website. Get the latest mental health news right in your inbox. July is Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. We are coming in hot, fitting for the month of July, with a reintroduction of our Declaration of Racism as a Mental Health Crisis, which we first released in the fall of 2020. Here's a quote. "With so much evidence supporting the reality of this crisis, it is incredible that it has taken all of us until now to name it. Still, the power of explicitly naming a crisis, especially in public health literature, should not be understated. It lays a foundation for future researchers studying inequities, and it validates the threat that racism poses to society by equating it with other threats to public health and mental health, like the opioid crisis, foodborne outbreaks, and the COVID-19 pandemic. As a mental health community, we must do more than name these threats in silos. We must act to dismantle the systems that perpetuate these crises and rebuild our systems of care in ways that seek to undo historic injustices and inequities. Don't be left out. Sign the declaration on behalf of your organization. It's easy. Just go to our website, hogg.utexas.edu, and under the Who We Are section, click the link that says Racial Justice Declaration, and you'll be able to add your organization's name. Turning to our topic for today, one of the biggest disparities affecting people of color in the U.S. concerns maternal mental health. In 2022, Working Group 512, based in East Austin, received a $5,000 grant from the Hogg Foundation for its maternal mental health project. The project provides holistic support and healing to a focused cohort of Black mothers and primary caregivers between the ages of 16 and 65 who are caring for at least one child, aged 0 to 2. Joining us to discuss this critical work is Naisha Gregory, a doula who works with Working Group 512, and Virginia Baldwin, a mother and client. First of all, welcome to the show. It's awesome to have you here with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
So my first question is for Naisha. Tell us more about your organization, you know, how it got started, how it operates, and how you came to be in their orbit.
Okay. So I started about a year ago. It's something that's been from generations to generations. My ancestors were actually midwives. And I literally was sleeping one night and I was like, what is my life purpose? And I went to sleep and I had this dream about being an old time. And then it was like, wait. And I called my mom and she was like, Mom, was like my great greats like helping with birth? And she's like, yeah, they were midwives. So I did a lot of research. And so I was like, this is where I'm destined to be. This is where I need to be. I need to be out in the community helping these women go through their pregnancy journey, their postpartum journey. Just being a part of the birth worker community is just a beautiful thing because you have mothers out there that don't have anybody. And I think that's where I feel in that emptiness. And so I truly do enjoy this. And also with my organization, I help teen mothers as well. I work with the ISD. And so I provide free teen service, doula services for those mothers, you know, because sometimes they don't want to listen to their parents. They want someone that's from the outside to come in and help them. So I make sure that is very important. And how I got with the organization, I got in contact with them. I was like, hey, I really want to be a part of what you got going on because I see something great and I want to be part of that. I want to be part of the movement. I want to be part of the community. And they gave me that chance to be part of the community when a lot of doors were literally closed in my face. Because I had one organization tell me, since I don't go to church on every Sunday, that I can't be part of their organizations, not knowing the reason why my daughter has softball on Sundays. So that's the reason why. But that don't mean I don't know the scripture. That don't mean that I don't believe. But I'm not going to go every Sunday because my children does come first. So when she literally slammed the door in my face after saying that, I said, there's other opportunities out there that's going to be better. And I'm going to be on the rise and be the next one that women can come to me and help me.
Yeah. What did that feel like? I mean, you wanted to contribute.
Yes.
But we're told, I guess the message is that you have to be of a certain, you have to be of a certain type already.
Already, judging me already.
For us to see you as.
I'm not gonna lie, my feelings were hurt, but then I used it as a motivation. I was like, okay,
sure.
You're gonna slam the door in my face, that I'm going to make sure my organization, whoever I'm part of, is going to be a bigger organization. And so that's what I looked in. Like I said, my feelings were hurt, yes, because she didn't even let me through the door.
Right.
You know, but then I was like, okay, I can cry about it or I can get motivation behind it. And I decided to do motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I want to do.
So this next question is for both of you, Naisha and Virginia. Mental health is universal, but it looks different for different people. And maternal mental health is no different, right? So I just want your sense of, and here I am trying to, I just want your sense of how this issue shows up differently for Black women in contrast to women of other races. Virginia, we haven't heard from you yet, so we would love to.
Sure. So for me, growing up in a Black family, in a Black community, mental health wasn't something that was acceptable for Black people, period, let alone Black men. We were taught we didn't have those kind of problems. We don't have those kind of issues. So when you are faced with something like depression or anxiety or PTSD or whatever it may be, whether it comes from pregnancy or not, you weren't allowed to talk about it. You couldn't bring it to your family. You couldn't bring it to your friends because that's not something Black people have. And so in Black communities, we don't have that support amongst each other. We have to seek that type of help outside of Black communities, and you can't talk about it because then you're looked at like something is wrong with you. You were a crazy person because you're depressed, or you're a crazy person because you're not handling something well. And so in other communities, other races, it's embraced. It's, you have a community behind you that take care of you when you have something going on. Like I said, in our communities, that's non-existent.
I totally agree what she's saying. Due to the fact is, I deal with depression, I deal with anxiety, and when I tried to reach out to friends and some family member, they told me, Black people don't go to therapy, Black people, they don't have these problems, and I felt like maybe there's something wrong with me, like maybe, yeah, maybe I'm going through something, and then I was like, well, sometimes I feel alone, and they're like, you shouldn't feel alone, you have kids. I understand, yes, I have kids, but at that sometimes I'm so out of myself that I have to go in the closet to cry. Just to, because I have to be a mom, I have to be a coach, I have to be the cook, I have to clean up, I have to do everything, and I can't take time for myself when I'm having these mental breakdowns. And so, when I was pregnant with my last son, I call it the pre-postpartum, because around 5 months, I started feeling horrible, I was going through so much, and I was like, let me go to a doctor. He tried to prescribe me medication, I did take it, and I felt worse. And then he's like, okay, maybe you need to go to therapy. Went to the whole therapy as well. And I walked out of therapy being more angry because she wanted me to talk about this, talk about that, but then not giving me a healing solution afterwards. So it made me replay everything over and over again. So when I go to sleep at night, that's still on my mind. I'm still having my anxiety. I'm still being depressed. I'm not falling asleep till 5 a.m. knowing my kids got to be at school, getting ready around 6:30. So I'm not resting. So if I literally was taking an empty glass and trying to pour it in another cup when I had nothing. And the doctor was like, well, I hope you know this medicine, when you have your baby might be a little hooked on it as well. It might have jitters. I'm thinking, why'd you tell me to take it then? Then I was like, let me do my own research. So that's why I started being more natural. And I was like, I'm going to do more essential oils. I'm going to do more meditation because I don't want the solution to be take medication. Because that medication sometimes with African-American women, it does not work. It makes us more depressed. It makes us more, you know, have more anxiety because some medicine is not hooked for our bodies.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one thing, like they always try to medicate us just to make us feel good for that split second. But when that medicine wear off, what, you want me to take it again? Or what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
What's the answer?
Yeah. I mean, that's often the case with mental health, in all kinds of ways. You know, you start with a very generic prescription and then you kind of back your way into something that works specifically for you.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I've had, you know, versions of that experience. You mentioned kids. How many? I'm curious.
I have 5 babies.
Oh, okay, yeah, because I do want to acknowledge that your daughter is actually here in the studio with us.
Yes.
We're not going to make her talk, but
yes,
she's keeping us company.
She is. She's a sweetheart. That's my little one. My little mini me there.
Okay. Yeah. Introduce her to our listeners if you don't mind.
Okay. That's Zanaya. She's literally my mini me. Like, she's always hooked on me.
Yeah.
You know, she's a mama's girl. Been there since. Always. I breastfed her since she was 2 years old, so that's why we're always hooked together.
Okay.
So, yes.
On behalf of the Hog Universe, it's a pleasure to meet you. Mm-hmm. All right. So, my next question is that it's no secret that Black moms struggle, but that the strong Black woman trope is still very prevalent, and you've sort of alluded to it. Both of you have alluded to it already.
Yes.
You got to show up there. You got to show up for other people.
Yes.
And you do that well.
Thank you.
What difference does it make to call out mental health for a group that is stereotyped as strong?
I think literally being strong is what we have to be sometimes. Like I said, we have to be strong because we wear a million capes. Sometimes we don't have that support system like the white mothers might have. We have to do it on our own most of the time. Most of our women, we do have to. But me being strong, you might not even know that 30 minutes ago, I might have had a breakdown.
Yeah.
Like no one know that, but I have to be strong because I have little ones looking at me. Like for example, if the lights get turned off, who are they looking at? The kids are looking at me.
Yeah.
They don't know why mommy didn't have the money. Mommy, you know, you need a new pair of shoes, so that's why the lights are turned off. They don't know that. But I have to be a presentable, like, okay, I'm gonna be strong because I have these little eyes. I have girls that's looking at me. That I wanna break that generational curse. So the word strong for a black woman, yes, we are strong, but at the same time, we do struggle. We do have these moments where we do break down. We do have our issues. And I think most people are like, well, you're strong because maybe you're not easy to approach. That's what a lot of people say. You're not easy to approach. It's because the way you present yourself, you're just this, you're just that. I'm thinking, I am, I'm this and that, but I do have my moments where I'm not strong.
Yeah, sure.
And sometimes I want to be like, ask me how am I doing? How am I doing during the day? You know, like I might need someone to speak to, like, hey, I'm not doing okay, but you think I'm strong. So you're not going to ask me that.
Yeah.
For me, I feel like as black women, one of the beautiful things about us as a black culture, period, is that a lot of times we build our strength from our struggle. We're looked at as you can't go through this because you're black. Like I mentioned before with mental health, you can't experience that. That there's no way you're going through that. But a lot of us, when we don't have food, when we don't have electricity, when we don't have gas for our cars, and we take that, like she said, and we build off of it. When the door was closed in her face, she was able to walk away and say, you know what, I'm hurt by this, but I'm going to grow myself from it. I'm going to go somewhere bigger and I'm going to go somewhere better. So I don't think that that's actually a negative statement, because I feel like in order to be strong, you have to let yourself be weak. You have to let yourself grow. And we're looked at like it's not okay to be weak, but everybody goes through something. Everybody has to go through something or we wouldn't be human. Jesus himself went through something. So if we can look at our strength from our struggle, I feel like it would be a better scenario. That's something we naturally do as black women. So yes, there's a stigma in the black community that says, you know, we have to be strong. And sometimes it's hard to put on that face. It's hard to put on the front that we're okay and nothing is wrong in our life and we got everything taken care of like we're expected to. Just in this pregnancy, this has been a rough pregnancy. I had COVID back in January, and so that put me down a lot. I didn't have any support. I was home. I live 45 minutes away from close family, so trying to feed myself, trying to, you know, shower, everything was a struggle. But I couldn't let them know that. So when it was over, I said, you know what? I'm going to make this easier for myself. So if I go through something again, I don't have to worry about relying on anybody else. So I was weak in that moment. But in the next moment, I went and bought a deep freezer. My deep freezer is fully stocked. I went and bought an extra pantry. My extra pantry is fully stocked. So I wouldn't have to worry about relying on someone to bring me groceries.
Blessed.
Or
yes.
Take care of my daughter or your animals. I took that moment of disparity and I turned it into something bigger, something more self-reliant. And I think most black women, most black people, period, grew up that way. And it's a natural thing that we don't even realize that we have until we're asked about it.
That is true. I totally agree with her because, like I said, if something bad happens, you're going to make sure it's not going to happen again.
Yeah.
Like I said, when a woman's or a person's lights get turned off, and like I said, you see the kids look in your eyes not knowing why, you want to make sure you will not see that look in their kids' eyes no more.
The entire reason why we wanted to give y'all a grant is because you're a people of color led organization.
Yes.
That does, you know, that gives hands-on support.
Yes.
But we live within a larger context.
Yes.
We live within a city. That's also within a state. And I just wonder how much you have time to pay attention to the policy environment in our state? Like, do you ever go to the Capitol? Do you ever go to City Hall? Or do you, you know, pay attention to what goes on in those spaces? Whatever experience you've had from that, you know, that you feel is most relevant to your life.
Okay. So I'm going to be completely honest, because that's the only way I know how to be.
It's what we want.
So honestly, the political climate of Texas, I don't waste my time.
Yeah.
And that's because they don't protect me. They don't protect my community. They don't protect my kids' future.
Mm-hmm.
So until that moment happens and someone shakes me up to get me to pay attention, I'm not going to waste my time.
Yeah.
And that's completely honest truth. With them not helping us, that's why we're in the community, to help our community.
Yeah. And as far as local Austin politics, is it kind of the same story?
It's kind of the same story.
Yeah.
Yes, until they can help our community.
Yeah.
And shake me up to get me to pay attention, I'm not going to waste my time.
Yeah.
Because like I said, we're here for our community. We're here for our future, our next generation, our children, our girls, our boys. That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
And if they're not going to help us, and they're not going to literally come speak to us to hear what we have going on, to hear us out, to see what our problems are, I'm not going to waste my time. Like, I feel like if I was a white race, I will be heard, but I'm not that race. So they're not gonna hear me out at all.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I'm not gonna pay attention until they get someone that in the office that's gonna help us out, help my community out, help me out, help these mothers out. I can't stand in front of the Capitol. I can't march, because what am I gonna be marching for?
Yeah. Virginia. I'm just wanting to ask you, as a client, how would your world be different if you didn't have, you know, Working Group 512 for support?
So prior to this pregnancy, because I'm 35 weeks pregnant now, so I'm pretty close to my delivery. I have a 2-year-old daughter as well. But prior to that, I had 3 pregnancy losses. And just to piggyback on some of the other things that we've talked about in this group, all 3 of them were traumatic. All 3 of them required surgery. And I was told I'd never have kids. And those few years of my life were the most depressing. They were the hardest things I've ever been through. And to not have support, even from a medical stance, my doctors never told me, hey, go talk to someone. Hey, this is what you might experience. I never talked about postpartum from pregnancy loss. I've never had any resources offered to me. I never even knew groups like this existed. So when I saw this group on Facebook, I was hesitant at first because I am kind of an introvert. But I thought, you know what? I need to do something different. I do have a little girl now, and I want to be different for her. I want her to be able to go out and do things and be involved in things in life. So I thought I'd give it a try. And it has been really helpful for me, just battling some of the fears that I have in this pregnancy. It's been great to get with other women who are pregnant or have small children, or just who have experience in this field, to talk to about what I'm going through, what I've been through, and to help them through whatever they're going through and what they've been through. Because this isn't just a help group. We're building a community where this is a movement. This isn't just let's get together once a month and get some free diapers. We sit and we talk. We exchange numbers. We've been exchanging gifts and ideas and helpful stuff with each other, stuff that we didn't know about. Even this being, you know, my second successful so far pregnancy, there are things that I still am learning about being a parent, about being pregnant, about infants. We got an infant and child CPR class today. That's not offered in a lot of places. So I feel like this group, not only for the help that we're getting with our children, but as a point of building a community and sisterhood together, has made a huge impact on my life. I would have never been on a podcast or anything like that before this group. I don't really do public speaking. I really don't talk to people I don't know that much. So it's opened up my life to more opportunities for myself and my children as well.
You've got, I wouldn't say that ours is a huge audience, but it is. This is a chance to kind of amplify your voice and tell, I guess, the community what it is that you need. So if for those who might be interested in helping or who want to know more about the organization, you know, how can they support?
So I'd say, like any group or pregnancy support, the normal things are always needed, like diapers, wipes, formula, things like that. But one of the things that I'm very happy about in this group is that we are trying to launch a breastfeeding seminar. You know, most of the places in Austin or surrounding cities that you go to, you know, food banks and things like that, pregnancy support centers, they give formula, they give diapers, they give wipes. But everybody is pro breastfeeding. Everyone, breast is the best. That's what you should hear everywhere. But there's no support for that. No one gives out breast milk storage bags or breast pumps or things like that in the community that breastfeeding moms need. And I think that puts a lot of hesitation in moms that might want to breastfeed, is there's not a lot of information out there. So that's one of the bigger things that the group is working on right now. So, I mean, we're needing people who are maybe in the medical field that have experience there, other mothers that have experience there, of course, supplies. We are looking for a venue to be able to do this because we want this to be big. We want this to be something that's different from what everyone else is doing. I breastfed my daughter, but I had no idea what I was doing. I had no help. I had no support. She wouldn't latch on. I didn't know what to do. So I think this would be an excellent opportunity for our community to have some type of seminar or meeting place or support for breastfeeding moms.
Yes, and I can definitely agree with that. I think a breastfeeding seminar will be great for the community. I honestly don't care what background you have, what knowledge you have, because I can learn from someone else and someone can learn from me. So I think a seminar will be amazing in our community. All of us just come together and just talk, come together and just learn from each other and just come together just to be united and help each other out, have a strong connect with each other. That's what we need. Because, to be honest, we're on a formula shortage anyway, so we got to come together. And breastfeeding will be great. And plus the benefits that it has for your children. Less getting sick, you know, less skin reactions. Just being healthy is great.
Okay, so they are Working Group 512. Proud to be able to call them a grantee of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health. Naisha, Virginia, we are so glad that you're able to find the time to speak to our listeners about this issue, yet one of the many, many ways that, you know, that mental health shows up for, you know, for everyday people, for communities, and looks a little bit different, but not so different.
Yes.
You know, kind of depending on where you're at. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
For this month's Mental Health in You, we have invited Jerrica Dykes, a mom and resident of Round Rock, Texas, to read for us her essay titled, Dear Pandemic Child. She submitted this for our New Voices Showcase, an opportunity for writers and other creatives that I'll be saying a bit more about at the close of this episode. But right now, here's Jerrica.
Dear Pandemic Child, the second you were born, I knew that something special happened in the world. You were certainly born a fighter. You and I started our journey together as survivors of trauma. I do my best each day to manage my own mental health and well-being. And even though each milestone is a trigger, I never dreamed I would think or say that your birth was the easiest part of your life yet. In just 2 short years, I've watched you develop and grow into your own little personality, yet I've watched you be deprived of so much that I know you would enjoy. You are no longer my lap child to take on your first flight. You are no longer my child under two with free admission to the local museum. You are no longer my baby for baby and me activities at the local library. You are no longer the sleeping baby in the baby carrier in the grocery cart. You have never had a birthday party. The places I dreamed of us going together have not been safe for your maskless face, while others simply could not make it through the pandemic. Your world may never exist without hand sanitizer and face masks. Each and every day, I drop you off to smileless faces covered in masks for 8, sometimes 9 hours. I return home to isolate myself in my home office rather than an office full of friendly faces, coffee, and office supplies. Each day, as I hug you goodbye and reflect upon what is going on around me, I worry if I'm doing the right thing. I worry if I made the right choice. Not to mention, for months, you would come home sick and ultimately set the household record for COVID tests. Why, we wonder? Because you were too young to be vaccinated and also too young to wear a mask. All the while, you were not too young to encounter this deadly virus, so we relied on others to do their part to keep you safe and well. I do not put much trust in others, so having to put your health and well-being in society's hands has not come easy. One day, there will be a vaccine for you, but not nearly soon enough to undo the damage and devastation the pandemic has caused in our world. I'm sorry to you, pandemic child, that this has been your entire life and the only memories you have. And frankly, there is not yet a vaccine discovered or strong enough to solve the many other issues you will face in the world. As your mother, I cannot help but to think and wonder what great things you will do with your life, but also worry and fear if you, my dear darling child, will be the next Atiana Jefferson or George Floyd. And while your race is beyond the medium caramel complexion of your skin, others will identify you as a Black child. In a world where Black children have a higher likelihood of early suspension and expulsion and involvement in the juvenile justice system. The same group are the same youth that are less likely to pursue advanced education or graduate high school. As your mother, my mind frequently wonders, will you ever be looked at differently as a Black child or Black adult? Will you ever be identified as a criminal because of the color of your skin? Will you ever be mistreated because of the color of your skin? The responses to these questions in my world are more often a yes than I desire. Yet I wish and hope for things to be different for you. However, I know that this is beyond my control. This lies in the hands of society, the same society I have to trust to protect you from the pandemic. That society who also exists of members of the village that it takes to raise you. Like you and me, however, that village is surviving the trauma of the past couple of years as well, and that village has not been here to raise you. One day, you will also go to school, and there you will spend a month learning about Black history. You will hear stories of ancestors from more than 100 years ago. There will be some amazing lessons in Black history you will learn there. But as your mother, I also want to recognize how you are living history from an early age, and I intend to ensure you also understand how recent events impact history as well. Even beyond the pandemic and racial injustices, your history is also comprised of toilet paper shortages and crazy winter storms. I sit and think a lot about you, pandemic child. But for now, I hope you will enjoy being a young child born at the beginning of the pandemic to a first-time mother. I hope your personality will continue to flourish. I hope you will continue to take a few seconds to dance in the rain in the middle of every storm. I hope you will eventually live in a world that has gone back to a normal state. And finally, I hope for your safety as you continue to grow and develop more memories and conquer the world as your own self. You are our future, and I know you were born to be the great human you were made to be, pandemic child or not. Sincerely, Pandemic Mother.
If you're interested in providing a testimonial for Mental Health in You, please reach out to me. You can get me at intothefold@austin.utexas.edu, and I'll be happy to help you with it. I have already mentioned the New Voices Showcase, but I really want to highlight that this is a real opportunity for creative people to contribute to our communications for a possible cash award. The first phase of the New Voices Showcase wrapped up last month, and that wonderful reading by Jerrica Dykes that you just heard was just one essay among several that we'll be featuring on our blog over the coming weeks. Phase 2 of the New Voices Showcase has just launched. It is focused on youth ages 16 to 24, and this time we are looking for video submissions. You only have until August 3rd to submit, so don't wait. If you go to our homepage, you'll be able to find a link to New Voices Showcase 2022 that will have all the information on how to submit an entry. Young people, we want to hear and see what you have to say, and we know you'll say it well. And now some closing thoughts. The last 2.5 years have been a lot. I think I've said this before. I myself am a childless adult, and I don't really see that changing anytime soon. Whenever the subject comes up, man, I am evasive. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know about kids. I don't know about this country. I don't know about kids in this country. I don't know about me in this country having kids. I look around and mostly what I see is old people locking in structures that future generations of young people will have to deal with. Black people's experience in these here United States really points up how so much of what shows up to us as mental health is just the divide beyond the individual. The divide between what we need and hope for ourselves, our children, and what the larger situation that we're caught up in allows us to do. Anyone who's ever listened to this podcast should know we're talking about mental health, which means, yes, by golly, seek out any and all available support. But if you've listened closely, maybe, God willing, another message has also seeped through. For those with power and privilege, your call should be to help the helpers, or at least not give them more work. Communities need that. Families need that. And above all, children need that. And that does it for this episode. We're glad that you could join us. July is Minority Mental Health Awareness Month, and we're going to be talking about it, so check back in a couple of weeks. If you have comments, anything that you would like to share, feel free to reach out to us at intothefold@austin.utexas.edu. Especially thoughtful comments will be acknowledged during a future episode. Production assistance by Anna Harris, Daryl Wiggins, and Kate Rooney. The Hawk Foundation for Mental Health stands in solidarity with our LGBTQ+ family, friends, and neighbors. Please leave us a review. Subscribe to us on the podcast app of your choice. Find us on iTunes, Apple, Google, Spotify, or TuneIn. Thanks for joining us.